Welcome to the Victory XR Show. I'm your host, Steve Grubbs, and today we have a very special guest, Elliot Levine with Qualcomm, but not just any guy from Qualcomm. Elliot leads education in the company, and I'll let him speak more specifically to what he does and the official title, but I know that when Elliot shows up at a conference or at your school, there's going to be a very good conversation about education and outcomes and the use of technology. So, Elliot, do you mind just giving everybody a little bit about yourself and your role at Qualcomm?
Sure thing, Steve. I am at this now. I've been in education for a little over 30 years. My emphasis has been the adoption of emerging technologies in education. I've been a columnist for National School Boards Association, all the way back to Electronic School Magazine, for anybody that actually still remembers that. Keynote speaker at conferences. I've held varying roles in K-12 higher education institutions, private companies, publicly traded companies, all the way up to the title of Chief Academic Officer and Distinguished Technologist. And probably where a lot of people know me, if anyone reads in EdTech Digest, when they first came out with their list of the top 100 influencers in EdTech back in 2018, I was named to that list with some pretty impressive colleagues. And we always joke, as I take some of my coworkers around to shows like BET and ISTE, they want to know, is there anybody that I don't really know? Because I seem to be stopping and hugging a lot of people at trade shows, catching up with people I maybe haven't seen in years. But that's part of the fun of this job.
Yeah. You are very well known, and just one more reason why we're very happy to have you on the show, because a lot of people want to hear what you have to say. So you're at Qualcomm. You moved from, I believe, in the classroom to some education roles, and then to Qualcomm. Is that right?
Yeah, I started back in the 90s in a K-12 school district here in New York. After that, went into the for-profit side and a startup. If anybody remembers the Great Teacher's Toolbox gradebook package, that was among the companies I was working with at the time. And then my own startup focused on technology sales, and I kind of led our public sector practice. Was teaching at the university level when I went back to graduate school here on Long Island. Spent a great number of years at Hewlett-Packard and later HP, as well as a phenomenal partner out in California called STS Education. Even during that time, created the first software to combat bullying and cheating and injuries in esports called Healthy Player One. So I've had a lot of fun along the way.
Yeah. So tell us what you do at Qualcomm specifically.
So, you know, my official title is Director of Worldwide Public Sector and Education. So I do also work with, you know, our government, both state, local, and national governments that are looking to embrace technology. But my ultimate passion throughout my whole life has always been about education and making an impact in the classroom. So for that, I really help drive the adoption of technologies that can embrace safer and more productive learning environments. And I think a lot of educators are surprised when we start examining the sort of technologies that Qualcomm and Snapdragon-based processors can be found, whether it's laptops, security cameras, drones, virtual reality headsets. They didn't realize how much of a presence that Snapdragon products have in their schools and universities already.
Yeah. And give us a few examples of those types of products.
Well, you know, everyone's kind of eagerly awaiting the launch of Snapdragon X processors for laptops, and you're going to see it from a large array of computer makers later this year. And these are going to be the first laptops capable of running generative AI on the device itself without the need of the cloud.
Wow.
I think that's a major game changer in education when you think, if you wanted to evaluate IEPs, the last thing you want to do is toss that up to a cloud where a third party, you know, LLM could pick up student information, particularly sensitive student information, and it could be reused in a way that would, you know, violate FERPA. a number of drones, not just, you know, drones for, you know, playtime, but drones for security, both outside the campus, as well as even in the corridors of schools from a number of companies. Cameras from companies like Cisco Meraki leverage Snapdragon processors in them to provide onboard AI performance. And, you know, VR headsets are synonymous with Snapdragon technology. Everything from a vast array of education products, all the way up through Quest and even Microsoft HoloLens all leverage Snapdragon technology to deliver that. And I haven't even begun to scratch the surface of what the company is doing in automotive, IoT. I mean, the list keeps going on and on. What I love about this company probably more than anything is they're constantly innovating. And they don't just say they're innovating, they actually do it. And they're doing it across so many industries.
Yeah, the powerhouses today are chip makers. You know, you see that in market cap and, you know, on Wall Street, et cetera. And frankly, even in national policy, the United States, for example, is very interested in making sure that we have the capability of producing chips. And so Qualcomm, somewhat specifically to mobile, or maybe completely specifically to mobile, has really dominated that space globally. And I know that the XR, is it called the XR2 chip? Is that what it's called?
Well, the XR2 chip, yeah, there is the XR2 Gen 2 that's now out, as well as even an AR2 chip that's now out just specifically for augmented reality.
So the XR2 Gen 2, is that what's in the Quest 3?
I would have to check if it's the Gen 1 or Gen 2, to be precise. But the big difference you see in the transition from XR1 to XR2 is really the optimization for a mixed reality experience. You know, the earlier headsets really focused on the limitation of what we call 3DOF, or 3 degrees of freedom. And that means I can look up, I can look down, I can look left, I can look right, and I could technically pivot my head. It's all by gaze position only. 6DOF means in addition to my gaze positions, I can now move up and down, left and right, forward and backwards. So I have movement as well as eye gaze. And anybody who's played any recent games, and I'm kind of old fashioned, I was back on the original Sony PlayStation. But, you know, if you're on PlayStation, you have one thumb controller for your gaze, another for your movement. So having 6DOF is something that today's learners already are quite accustomed to and oftentimes are eagerly, you know, they're very comfortable with. And that's at the heart of what XR2 is able to deliver. And all these new generation headsets are really reflecting it. And it creates a much more immersive learning environment. And that's where some of the studies of late have shown that truly immersive experiences are what can be the game changer in academia.
So we see Qualcomm chips in obviously VR headsets like Quest and frankly, most of the headsets, Pico and Lenovo and Vive and all around the world. But we also see them in our iPhone. And then I think in tablets, the iPad and that type of thing.
So you'll see different types of chipsets. So Apple, for example, you mentioned, you'll find a Qualcomm modem. In the device, but they use their own silicon. In tablets, yes, we do make a variety of semiconductors specifically just for the tablet industry, running Android, and does it quite well. And that's separate from our chipsets for compute running now Windows. But you'll find what we do is we don't just simply take the same chip and try to apply it across the board. Every industry has very specific requirements and needs. And each one of those industries and use cases gets addressed in specific chipsets, which is why now, instead of just having one generic chipset for XR, there's really one more for mixed reality, and there's another specific to augmented reality. And I think, again, that just shows that the company is willing to you know, take a leadership role in this industry, especially, but make sure that we're identifying the challenges, the needs to deliver the best experience.
So help me understand this. On my computer, I might have both a GPU, a graphics chip, and a CPU, a computing chip. Am I right that in the headset, you just have one chip?
So, yes, when we do a whole system on chip, that can deliver not just your CPU and your GPU, but the other one that now starts to come into play, particularly in computing environments, is the NPU, the neural processing unit. And using neural processing versus GPU for things like artificial intelligence, it is much more productive. You can process that much more information with far less power consumption demands. You know, when we think historically of GPU, what do a lot of us think about? We think about our gaming PCs that have these massive GPUs inside cranking out tons of heat, tons of power. And imagine our phone being able to do that. We don't quite have that luxury. But the fact is that the latest smartphones with the new, like my Samsung here, but with plenty other OEMs, they're leveraging the latest Snapdragon processors that can deliver generative AI right on the phone. And the one thing that nobody's going to give up on their phone is they don't want a phone with a fan and cranking out a lot of heat, and they don't want a phone with no battery life to it. And that's, you know, we've taken that element of it and brought it to so many other technologies. So yes, you're going to see CPU, GPU, and NPU now on more silicon as it comes out in different use case applications.
So my Ray-Ban Meta glasses, which I wear these nonstop all day long for listeners. If you haven't tried these out, I love mine.
And, really?
You know, these are prescription, they're transition. But I was wondering what chip was in them. And one of my friends at Qualcomm told me it was a Qualcomm chip.
Yes.
Which chip would, do you know if that's the Gen 2?
I would have to look to see which one it is.
While you're looking, I'll just tell people, you know, the thing that I love about it is that I have this AI at my beck and call all day long. It gets a little better all the time, but you know, I can walk down the street and say, hey, call so-and-so, and it's right on my glasses. I can ask it questions. You know, it's somewhat limited right now in the questions you can ask, but it's expanding. They keep putting out updates. So it's pretty cool stuff. I can take videos, I can take photos, all of that type of thing.
Yep. And in fact, so that particular pair of glasses that you're wearing, that is using the AR one Gen 1. So specifically a use case for augmented reality for day-to-day use, as you're explaining.
Interesting. Well, I love it. So I'm a big endorsement for the Ray-Ban Meta glasses. Let's move on to the topic of use cases for immersive learning,
sure.
Spatial computing, metaverse learning, whatever we want to call it, whatever term. What are some of the best use cases that you're seeing as you travel around to shows and schools?
You know, there's one mindset among many people that, oh, this is just going to replace a classroom teacher. No, you know, absolutely not. But what studies are showing is that when we take traditional classroom learning, you know, we take the lecture and we supplement that with staggered VR experiences over time, the amount of material that students can master and retain knowledge of can increase dramatically. You know, if we go back to the late 1800s, there was a psychologist whose last name was Ebbinghaus, and he was very well known for the forgetting curve. Everything you learn and hear about right now, in the matter of just a week's time, you'll be lucky if you could remember 5, maybe 10% of the information that was presented to you. However, in models that have said after the lecture, stagger VR experiences by one day by 2 days, by 3 days. If we look at that scenario alone, after 3 days of just lecture, you're likely to remember maybe 20% of what was presented. However, with staggered VR practice, you know, three times over that week, retention could exceed 60%. So a 3x differential.
Wow.
Now, those are the results, but we really got to talk about the why. And up until now, if you think about most use cases for VR, it's been field trips, it's been science labs. And while they are great learning experiences, I think we're only at the tip of the iceberg as to what VR is capable of delivering for educators. And that's what we've kind of missed out on. So why is that? Well, first off, you're eliminating for most children in a VR environment all the distractions. They're not looking at other students. They're not looking at their phone. They're not looking at their watch. They are completely surrounded into the experience. Second, we know from studies of measuring brain activity that users in a VR environment are actually, their brain is processing more information. And it's wild to see some of these brain scans, in fact. So you're already triggering use in your mind in ways you haven't before. Plus, by delivering content repeatedly, your brain is being told, okay, repetition means importance. I need to remember this. Which is, you know, why my wife always has to tell me three times, you know, to do something because she knows I'm going to forget. The same thing applies here in VR. You know, it was like my wife invented VR. Thank you, honey. But repetition triggers importance in the mind. So they're going to retain information. And as a result, you look at some of these studies, like PricewaterhouseCooper, you know, had a very phenomenal study that looked at training employees and what was taking 2 hours for learners to master in a classroom setting, or 45 minutes in e-learning, we're getting the same result in just 29 minutes in virtual reality. And we can keep going, but.
Yeah, you and I both know the federal government has a real emphasis on reading and math. Talk a little bit about reading and math in immersive learning, spatial computing.
Well, you know, I think you know, Steve, behind the scenes, I've been really pushing for this now for some time, and I've been at Qualcomm 3 years. I was super excited to see that, you know, there are companies now really stepping into both math and literacy spaces. And again, it may not be as easy to execute, but if it can be done and done effectively, we really have a game changer here. You know, one company at the moment, you know, they're focused on secondary math, and they completed what I would consider to be a randomized study where they, you know, it was random selection of students. And what they found was that there was a class of students who went through traditional lecture, and then there were students who did traditional lecture, but they supplemented it with math VR learning experiences. Well, the test group performed 11% better on standardized tests for math than the control group. I don't know a single school superintendent in the U.S. that wouldn't jump at the opportunity to see that sort of progress. In fact, I know that adoption of pilots around the country are now taking place as a result of that. There's so much more we could be doing in elementary math, in literacy, particularly amongst English language learners, that this could be a game changer to help children catch up so that they have the tools necessary to learn at the same level as their peers.
Yeah. And I assume that's Prism's VR with Anaru.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, they've done a phenomenal job. And I think they are helping to really elevate what's possible in VR. I think, you know, it's just a matter of time before we're going to see more math curriculum in play. And I think we're going to hopefully see some of the ELA content providers want to step into this space. You know, how many times can you try to come out with a new text, a new e-learning platform, and yet your customers and your schools don't see any measurable results? If we can bring about change through VR experiences, why wouldn't the publishers want to take advantage of that? And why wouldn't schools want to at least give it a shot?
Yeah. No, that's great. And we know that whether you look at the PwC study, whether you look at, one of my favorites that rarely gets mentioned, but I first saw it from Alvin Wang Graylin. He shared, it was a Taiwan university study that hooked up an EEG to the brains of students. And, you know, when they sit in a standard classroom, very little of the brain was lighting up. When they were online doing some things, more of the brain lit up. But when they were in VR, their brain was just exploding with knowledge and with new receptors and all of that. It was just fascinating research. And it's a few years old now, but still, I'm certain it's true.
It really is, because I have, over my time, I have taken tours of schools and universities and research programs, and they love to take me on tours to see their schools. And this one university, I remember, they're showing me this state-of-the-art lecture hall. And every student's got, high tech in front of them. And there is the professor at the front of the classroom, and they're doing death by PowerPoint. And where I'm standing at the back, I can see the screens of about 100 students in that class. And what did I see? I saw email. I saw Amazon. I saw eBay. I saw Spotify. I saw everything but learning taking place. It's very easy to buy the stuff. Anybody can go buy headsets. But really coming to the table and addressing the pedagogy and ensuring a phenomenal experience that delivers results, that's the game changer that needs to occur. Yeah. And I think we're right now at a point, probably the equivalent of laptops in the mid-2000s. Right now, this is still something in a lab environment, or perhaps we see if schools are going to do lab experiences maybe twice or three times a week for students in a particular subject. Perhaps they've got a ratio of one VR headset for every 10 to 15 children, probably where a lot of them are at today. And if they're not, they're already behind the curve. I think what we're going to see evolve over the next few years is we're going to see that ratio drop to one headset for every five children. And I suspect there will be academic institutions that say, we're no longer going to do a one-to-one program for a computing device. We're going to do a one-to-one program for a learning device, and perhaps substitute that laptop, that Chromebook, that tablet for a headset. The prices are on par. And the question is, which will deliver a result? And I will tell you, I would love to see the study that kind of evaluates that to see if one can deliver better academic outcomes.
Yeah, I agree. And let's, we're running a little low on time, and I want to make sure we get to this topic because it's dominating headlines. Let's talk to me about how you see AI, artificial intelligence, fitting into the world of immersive learning.
Oh, okay. Well, I can tell you from my vision, I actually think in the next few years, we're going to be at a crossroads of XR and AI. Today, every student goes through the same VR experience in a classroom setting. They do the same frog dissection. They visit the same city or cultural landmark. And that's great. But imagine being able to harness into personal passions. If you knew something that a student was very passionate about, that you're going to give them a challenge-based activity on a topic that matters to them and that can even adapt in real time to the stimulus that they're providing. If they're getting something wrong, don't just mark it wrong or say, oh, the student failed the simulation. No, adapt to help determine through diagnostics. Not only I want to know why you know what you got wrong, I want to understand why you got it wrong. Because if I can provide curriculum mapping to an appropriate exercise to overcome that hurdle, whether in the middle of that experience or as a follow-up recommendation by the teacher, I can use this as a teaching tool that exists in no other vehicle. We've talked about personalized learning in education now for God knows how long. And really, in most cases, this personalized learning is nothing more than differentiated. Something for the kids doing very well, something for the kids doing very poor, and something for the masses. That's not personalized. I want to go in and really dive deep and give each individual child that IEP-like experience. I want to help them establish goals, meet them, or exceed them. And AI has that possibility to give the time that, you know, it's impossible for teachers to do personalized learning for 30, 40 children. It cannot be done. There is not enough time. But AI can be the tool to help the teacher in that. And VR can be the experience in which they, you know, get to learn that material in. When that happens, I think I'm ready to retire because it's going to be as good as it gets on my watch.
Yeah. So what's interesting about what you say is our goal, we should be rolling out our 3D immersive AI tool in Q2 of this year. We're just weeks away.
Wow.
When it first rolls out, it will be pretty cool, but probably Q3, we're not going to be able to go as far as you're describing, but what so the teacher's up there teaching, the AI teacher is teaching, and then stops and does a quick little assessment. Did you understand this? You know, and throws that out. And if they click the right answer, then it keeps moving on. But if they click the wrong answer, then it begins explaining it in a different way. And at any point, the student can raise their hand and ask a question. So, you know, it's not quite on point with what you're saying, but it's getting closer.
And again, we're going to always need, you know, the steps. You know, the journey of 1,000 miles always begins with that single step. And we're going to want to look at not only how we deliver the content, we're going to want to look at how we create assessments that really are natural and, you know, most effective. You know, multiple choice is great. The problem is it's too easy to guess your way through.
Yeah.
If it's an answer that the student has to figure out on the screen or with the hand controller or with, you know, gestural motions to show, you know, how to do the project or do the work, that gives greater depth of knowledge. And again, you know, ensures that we know, okay, they got it right, but did they get it right the right way? Or did they just happen to guess the right, you know, A through E? That's why I think there is so much opportunity, and I think so much innovation that's going to occur in this segment between now and the end of this decade. It's an absolutely phenomenal place to be.
Yeah, we won't even recognize it by the time 2030 comes around.
No way. No. And I think especially with the advent of not just cellular technology, but 5G, you know, bringing that level of connectivity and connection speed to the device, wherever it is, whether it's at school or at home, to be able to have that sort of real-time simulation becomes very possible. Because it's no longer going to just be content running on a headset. It's going to need to adapt on the fly. And I think our vision of, you know, the Star Trek holodeck is going to be here much sooner than we realize.
Yeah, I 100% agree. It's something that we work on literally every single day. So last question. Let's say this is your moment. You're sitting in front of a school principal, in front of a teacher, the dean of a college. And you have a minute, 90 seconds, to tell them one thing that would leave an impression. What would that one thing be?
I'd usually start by asking a question pretty simple. what kind of legacy do you want to leave in this institution? What do you want to be known for? You know, it's very easy to play the safe road. And in fact, there was a study years ago, school superintendents that didn't rock the boat had an average job tenure of 3.2 years. And those that tried to bring about positive change had a tenure of 2.6. You know, we are in a very unique situation in academia. We talk about change, but we're probably the most change adverse out of most industries. And understanding the legacy that the individual wants to leave behind, that's key to knowing, are they really ready to explore the unknown and take a new chance? And honestly, I think, you know, in controlled environments with sound planning, it's something that every single student, regardless of age, regardless of background, socioeconomic, geographic, it's something that every child deserves. And when I see that we still have children who will graduate school and barely can read, we've got problems. These are harsh realities that we're facing. And it's not just here in the US. This issue plagues us across the entire globe. Technology alone isn't going to solve it. Absolutely not. But having the tools handy are going to be so critical. And even today, less than 9% of children worldwide, out of 1.6 billion kids, are being given access to some technology for learning. That's a big number of children that are missing out. So I will always come back to, what kind of mark do you want to leave on these students? And we go from there.
That's a great one. Friends, Elliot Levine, the sage of education from Qualcomm. We appreciate you joining us today. Love all of your thoughts. Always love visiting with you. And we will look forward to visiting with you again soon.
I look forward to it, Steve. Thank you so much.
Thank you, everybody. We will be back next week with another great show.